March 14th, 2024, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 270. I'm Matt Klee, the senior developer at Lullabot. With me, co-host of the show, front-end dev, Morgan Eck. Hi, Morgan.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing today?
Outstanding. Glad you're here. So,
likewise.
A lot of times when people build Drupal websites, they end up building a website, handing it off, and leaving. And then that's somebody else's problem to deal with in the future. And I've been on a lot of projects that have been that way, but we're kind of on one now that's more long-term, and we're doing lots of maintenance as well as building new hotness, right?
Yes. Sorry, I was a little distracted. Yes.
Some projects that we work on have a lot of websites that all kind of need to be maintained at the same time.
Adding to that difficulty, for sure.
And we have some folks that know what they're doing when it comes to that. First up, we have the VP of Extended Support at Lullabot. He's starting with working with Drupal in 2005 and has worked with Drupal projects big and small, including Sony and Lifetime TV. He's the person who established the Lullabot Support and Maintenance Department, and we'll be talking with a few members of that team today. Please welcome David Burns. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
And we will also be talking to Kathy Thays today, who is our support team manager here at Lullabot. Kathy has been working with Drupal since 2006 and made many core contributions back in the Drupal 8 Big Push. She was also the first recipient of the Aaron Winborn Award. Excuse me. That's pretty cool. Hey, Kathy, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing super. Glad to be here.
Also with us, we have a developer on the Lullabot support and maintenance team. He's been involved in Drupal since 2013. He authored Drupal 8 for Beginners, a student of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Please welcome Jason Blanda. Hey, Jason.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Is Jiu-Jitsu a useful, like, Drupal skill?
It can be when you're frustrated.
I love it.
Good way to blow off some steam.
And we've also got Jenna Tollerson with us today. Jenna is the engineering lead for Digital Services Georgia. And it looks like that's a new title or group. And Jenna is an Acquia certified developer and has been building Drupal sites for over a decade. She writes and reviews code for GovHub, which is the state of Georgia's official web publishing system. And she also acts as a technical advisor for Digital Services Georgia strategic initiatives. That is a lot. Welcome, Jenna.
Hello. I'm so glad to be here with so many of my favorite nerds today.
It's been a while since we've been on a call together, Jenna.
It's a pleasure to see you.
Initial team that kind of built out a lot of the Georgia infrastructure. So if you don't mind jumping in first, tell us about Georgia.gov and all of the Georgia sites.
Yeah, and tell us your new group title.
Our new group title is the Georgia Technology Authority Office of Digital Services and Solutions, which is at the state of Georgia.
That's a mouthful.
Wow.
It is a mouthful. Our main flagship product on my team is Georgia GovHub, which is a web publishing platform built on Drupal, based on Drupal, that is a multi-site setup. So we host, I think, 85 sites now on a single code base where everybody has their own database. So it's Georgia.gov and then a lot of small agencies at the state of Georgia and also a lot of big agencies like the Department of Revenue and the Department of Driver Services, which is kind of like Georgia's DMV, the Department of Driver Services.
Thanks.
So it's a multi-site setup and every site has its own database. Is it all served off the same platform or how does that work?
Yes, it's all served off the same platform. We do all of our everybody shares one code base, and then every 2 weeks we do a deployment and update all of the sites at one time in a big sweep, which is fun.
And I kind of mentioned that it's been a couple of years since we've last talked. So Georgia.gov has been live with this platform and continually evolving over that time, right? Something like yes. that? I don't remember the timeline either. It's okay.
I don't. Like, what is time? It is a flat circle. Yes, Georgia.gov has been continually. We actually, GovHub is the Drupal 8 and up version of our web publishing platform. We came from Drupal 7 and before that, a proprietary system. So since I think GovHub itself was 2018, maybe.
Okay. That sounds about right.
And since then, we've actually gone through a bunch of stuff. But the most recently, we redid the entire look and feel with a brand new theme for all of GovHub called Georgia Bloom, which we have a botanical theme internally. So we name things.
So now that you have a few years managing the sites this way, you mentioned that you do updates on a regular basis. Is it still scary when you make those updates? Or are you comfortable with it?
Well, we have a lot of good processes in place and I'm very comfy with it. And one of the things that's made it a lot easier recently is having a really good automated updater robot that keeps us up, that keeps the even like really tiny patch updates in place and keeps us moving. So
Georgia.gov, GovHub was actually one of the first support clients when we started the department 5 years ago. And we've had the joy of learning a lot by doing the Drupal 8 to 9 upgrade, which took many, many months.
Yeah, that wasn't easy, but it was doable, right?
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of it was 8 to 9 waiting for basically the contrib space to be ready, right? So we probably waited 6 months, if not more, after 9 was released to actually start working on it. But even to getting to 9 took about 6 months, and we learned a lot during that process. One of them being the benefits of automated updaters. So when we went from 9 to 10, that timeline was drastically reduced.
Yeah. So when you say we learned a lot about automatic updaters, what do you mean?
So when we went from 8 to 9, we did most of it manually, right? We ran upgrade status and upgrade rector, which told us what modules were available to us with Drupal 9 support and how much of our custom modules and themes needed to be updated with removals of deprecations and new coding standards. And we wound up doing a majority of the module updates in groups, like here's all the editorial modules. Let's create a pull request or a release that only focuses on the editorial modules. So we could point the QA team to just go test that area of the site. And we did those in phases and tried to get them out with each sprint deploy.
And those were manual.
And those were all manual, right? And we realized, like, we can't be spending 6 months every time there's a new core release. And around that time, you know, we started looking into things like Violinist.io and GitHub Renovate. And what was the other one?
Dependabot.
Dependabot. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And I will say, we did similar practices with 9 to 10. Where we did a module inventory and we collected them into groups of like editorial modules or admin modules. And we ticketed all of that stuff. And by the time some of those tickets came along, the auto updater had already taken care of updating the versions of these modules to be D10 compatible. And so we were constantly updating our spreadsheets as well, because they took care of a lot of the work for us.
And yeah, so if we look at Drupal 8 to 9 and we did our audit, we probably saw about like 75 out of 150 contrib modules that needed to be manually updated. And when we did that same audit going from 9 to 10, we probably had like maybe, I don't know, 35, 40 modules. I might be off by the numbers exactly, but it was significantly less work. And as Jason mentioned, by the time we got around to be like, oh, let's do this update. You know, Renovate already created the pull request for us, and we merged it in. We've added automation around other projects that do like checks and visual diff checking, and if everything passes, we actually auto merge on some of our projects, which is really interesting. I'm not sure if we've gotten to that point on GovHub yet.
On GovHub, we do auto merge any minor or patch update that has passed all of our automated testing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, which is really cool because then you wake up in the morning and overnight renovated bot is gone. I merged this for you. You're done.
For example, just to kind of lay it out there, if you have the ABCD module and the contributor in Drupal made a .1 release of the ABCD module, Renovate will run that, or it will create a merge request, run the tests, and then possibly even auto-merge if everything passes. Super handy. It sounds like having a good bank of tests is pretty important.
Oh yes, we have a lot, and GovHub particularly, we have a lot of test coverage that goes through and like clicks all the buttons and does all the things. And we have visual diffs with Tugboat that needs to pass a certain threshold in order to get passes. So yeah, we do have a lot of test coverage. So not everything gets to auto merge, but definitely, especially for like really minor things, you're like, I barely even had to look at this. The robot knows what it's doing.
That's always really nice. Yeah, it was really great. Having GovHub handed to us from client services because it had a lot of those checks already in place. We found with the rest of our support clients that don't have test in place, the bare minimum of testing we want to do is doing the CRUD operations on our entity forms. So like nodes, files, media, file uploads, documents. And the reason we've kind of like targeted that is, you know, I've been doing Drupal for way too long. I've noticed that when you install a module, if something is going to throw a fatal error or break your site, it's usually in the editorial experience. And then for the front end stuff, we have our visual diffs that could catch, you know, like if a module is changing markup and breaks the page layout. So really no end-to-end testing being done for the user experience, just on the editorial experience.
Now, you mentioned Drupal 8 to 9 was kind of when we started bringing this in. Was automated testing a thing in Drupal before Drupal 8, 9 kind of transitioning? Like, what made it possible around that time?
So end-to-end test, unit test, like there has been automated test in Drupal for quite a while. The reason it got important, at least for most of the people on this call, is because we started the support and maintenance department, and we realized like if we're going to be adding value to some of our clients, some of who are only purchasing like 30 hours a month or 60 hours a month, we can't be spending a majority of that time having a developer run composer commands, do manual checking, because that'll burn through those hours really quick. And when you do that, you tend to only prioritize like security releases instead of every single like patch release. And if you're only doing security releases, there may be a bug on your site. And when you investigate the bug, which might take like an hour or 2 hours, you realize, oh, here's a patch on the issue queue. Oh, this patch has been merged. And if we just updated this module, that bug wouldn't have been there. So by keeping your site up to date, you're squashing things before you even realize that there may be issues. And most importantly, when you do get major Drupal version releases, like a majority of your code base is ready to do the major core bump.
Yeah, so I think sometimes too, like sometimes you'll grab a module, it does everything that you want it to do, but it does it in a way that maybe you're not always thrilled about. There's just like this one little aspect that you're like, I wish they would fix that. And if you ignore all of those minor updates, sometimes they sneak in that one little thing that makes this module do exactly what you want it to do, and you're spent who knows how long just wishing it was there and it was there all along. And if you're staying up on these updates, sometimes you get the features that you're hoping for.
Yeah.
What kind of tests do you run? I people fight over that all the time. Like,
so we started out with Cypress test, and then our engineers like did a project where they were using Playwright, which is owned by Microsoft. And you know, we're like, oh, we're already started doing Cypress test. We're just going to stick with this because we're familiar with it. But then being the data nerds that we are, we're like, well, let's actually write two very similar tests and see which one runs faster. And Playwright has been significantly faster. And we've also seen a shift in the communities where people were going from Cypress to Playwright. I still think both technologies are great and use whatever one works best for you. Some tests are better than no test. But I think I see our team slowly shifting towards Playwright.
I agree.
We also use Behat, sorry.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes too, your testing framework needs to be evaluated, especially if your tests are a mess and they're all over the place. And sometimes we like to write tests just to write tests, and that can significantly slow down the process of these auto updaters as we're waiting on things. And then those tests for test's sake can break, and then you go to fix it and you're like, why does this exist at all? And so sometimes in those situations, when you realize you have a lot of bulk, that's when you should maybe reevaluate. If we're going to have to rewrite all of these tests anyways, do we want to switch frameworks or do we want to stick where we're at? But to Dave's point, having tests is better than not. And in our department specifically, if you're coming to us with tests already in place, yes, we're going to evaluate those for quality and usefulness. But, you know, I think sometimes we got to be versatile enough to know the testing frameworks that are out there, whether it's Cypress, Behat, Playwright, and work within those. I think the goal more is, are these tests useful? And can they give us an added layer of confidence when this auto updater just updates a bunch of stuff? Can we trust that our tests tested the things that are important? And when this auto merges, we can have a high level of confidence that is not going to break anything.
Jenna, why don't you tell us a little bit about GovHub's test runner? What's it using right now? Kind of, you know, give folks an insight there.
What's it using right now? Well, right now we have a lot of Behat tests and also a PHP unit tests and of linters and all the other good stuff. But we're actually probably looking to retire our Behat tests and move over to Playwright. Not just because it's faster, although it sounds like it is much faster. We're excited about that. But because it also more modern and maybe a little easier to write the tests. We don't have as many people who are not developers writing tests, so being able to put things in Gherkin format is not as necessary for us as it might be for other teams. So,
isn't Behat the one that is the plain text, like the actual test file that gets written is plain text?
So right. So, like, given I am an administrator, when I click this thing should happen, more or less. Yeah. But the idea is somebody who's not a developer can write a really cool test around that, but instead just sort of adds an extra layer for us in particular.
There's also code that has to back up the I am an administrator, which, you know, is the code.
Does have to be written by a developer. So it breaks it apart into two separate pieces.
Like Cypress and Playwright, there's JavaScript based. So you're doing like DOM selection and you're checking values put into fields. And it's really neat. It's modern. It's quick. And we found that, like, you know, if a developer is able to write JavaScript, they can write test, which is most everybody on the development team.
Yeah. And I don't even think you need to be like a high level JavaScript developer to be able to understand these tests. If you can understand how JavaScript is formatted and even just look at existing tests with any kind of, you know, knowledge level, I think you could get in there and start writing any kind of automated tests using these JavaScript forward frameworks. So the barrier to entry is kind of low, which is really awesome.
Plus, especially when there's already like one or two tests, those are the hard ones. And then once they're there, copying and pasting and adjusting selectors and actions. Yeah, I agree with Jason. You don't have to be a JavaScript expert to do that. I think I could even do it.
You could totally do it, Kathy. What's cool is both of these have plugins that you could actually record your actions in the browser and then export what you've done into a test, all that JavaScript, and then you could tweak it, you know, clean it up, make your selectors better, because it tends to be a little more verbose when you're clicking through on like how it's doing the selectors for field names and stuff.
Yeah, and caveat to that, they never work as well as the demo video showing how to do it. There's always hiccups along the way, so you likely are going to have to go back in and modify some stuff.
Jason, you know that when you make a demo video, it's a very specific path that you're recording, and you know it's not going to go wrong because you've done it 17 times because it broke 16 times before that, right? So of course the demo video looks great.
Oh, absolutely. You should see the other demo videos before that demo video.
Oh, crap. I forgot that. Never mind. Let's try again. We're talking with the Lullabot support and maintenance team and Jenna Tullerson from Georgia's state government, running a bunch of websites on Drupal, figuring out how to keep them all up to date and deployments running smooth. Coming up, we'll have more on the Lullabot podcast right after this.
Welcome back to the Lullabot podcast. We are having a chat with a few members from our Lullabot support and maintenance team, as well as Jenna Tollerson with us today. And we're talking about managing software updates for hundreds of websites. Welcome back.
Jenna, now you manage software updates for like 80 some websites. When did you start Drupal? How did you get involved with Drupal? Did you ever think you'd be doing 80 some websites when you've installed Drupal for the first time?
I got involved with Drupal. I don't know how many years it's been now. It was a long time ago, but like a lot of people, I was building little websites for, you know, specific clients and like hand rolling CMSs so they could make updates to their own websites themselves, which, as we all know, is a huge pain and probably not using the best security practices either while I was at it. And one day I was like, there's gotta be a better way to do this. And I did try out a few other CMSs, which I will not name. And then one day I installed Drupal and was able to put together all of my forms with, y'all might remember this, the CCK. Is it CCK or CCK?
Oh yeah. CCK, CCK, otherwise known as Drupal now, right? Yeah.
Right? Otherwise known as Drupal now.
The CCK was the content construction kit. It was the early like put fields on a node thing. So yes. If you want an image on a node, you put in an image field. If you want a text area, you put in a text area, and you can really create structured data. That was Drupal's early win, in my opinion, right? CCK.
It was a huge win though, because I was like, oh, I could just build this form and then I can build a bunch of views, which is also now just part of Drupal. Yeah. And then just focus on like making a nice looking website for like this small business that sells soap or whatever, which is a thing that I'm just doing.
Were you doing Uber cart or commerce or anything like that? You were saying you sold soap. So
yeah, I did use Uber cart. I had forgotten what name it was, but it was Uber cart. That's right.
Oh my gosh. Back in the day,
back in the day. Yeah. So if you understand how time works and you're keeping track, you can get an idea of how long I've been doing this. And then, almost 13 years ago, the state of Georgia was moving from a proprietary content management system to Drupal 7. And they needed somebody to work with the vendor they're working with at the time and like translate all of the nerd language, more or less. They wanted to bring someone internal to the team to be their own nerd that could interface with the other nerds. And that was me. And I was brought on just to help with this migration. And then they were like, we feel like you're doing really good stuff here. Maybe you should hang out. And now it's been over a dozen years later and a couple different builds of Drupal.
I will say they were absolutely correct in the decision to allow you to continue hanging out.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So I know in another life, I was a support developer before I was a front-end developer. And towards the end of my life doing that, it would take me quite literally all of my time to do updates. And so before this infrastructure was in place, how long would you say it would take a member of the team to complete all of these updates?
I know for me, from past projects, not necessarily this one, but when I was doing, like Jenna was saying, managing for small businesses and things like that, I might only have 5 or 6 websites that need module updates and core updates. And that is a day's worth of work between FTPing files because you didn't have Composer and doing the updates locally and all that fun stuff. I mean, you were talking not just a day as in like, oh, I'm doing this for today, like a full 8+ hours just updating modules and core.
I'm sure there's people listening right now that are just like, just run Composer update and get all the updates at once and create a pull request for that and everything's good. Yes, that would probably work for a majority of sites out there. But knowing that you've got 85+ websites running on a single platform, you want to be very specific about your testing. And let's say you did run Composer update in a single PR and it does fail. What module caused that to fail if you got 20 things being updated at once? Having this automated updater in place, which creates a single PR for each package that needs to be updated. If a test fails, you're like, oh, this is the thing I need to look at. It helps you narrow your scope on fixing things. And I see that as a huge benefit. So if you were to need to update, say, even 5 modules a week, and you need to do QA testing, regression testing manually, like at on average, say 2 hours per module, which would be 10 hours a week, 40 hours a month at least, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, and I think we didn't mention too that we're talking about this auto merge thing. We're not auto merging into the main branch. All of these, like Dave said, all of these auto updates per module will create their own pull request. But when all that stuff passes, it merges into like a branch for that sprint automatically. And then we have another chance to QA run tests on this branch that has all of these updates together. So we're testing each PR individually, and then we're testing them again as a group. And then that ends up being merged into the master branch. So we're not just like willy-nilly, oh, this one passed, let's throw it into the master branch. There's like a middle ground before it all gets there.
Yeah, my couple projects that I PM also use an intermediate branch for updates. On one customer, we do that because the customer has their own internal development team. And so they're pushing to master. And if we were pushing all of our Renovate updates to master, they would be updating their PRs like all the time from these auto merges. And so we still get the test coverage at the individual module level, which reduces our time to investigate when something goes wrong. But the intermediate update branch contains our noise so that it doesn't bother other active development. And let me think. I think my other project kind of does it for similar reasons, but it's not as active a project over there. So it's kind of an option for that project to merge into master. I think it's really project dependent. Dave, when do you think merging to the automatic updates with the auto merge to master, like when is a project a good fit for that?
Yeah, if a project is stable and there's really no active development going on, I believe one of the other projects you were referring to, there's actually another agency working with them.
Yes.
So we don't want anything that we're doing as the support team to create any blockers for them because time is money. So having this integration branch that the client gets to decide, hey, we're ready to QA all this stuff. Now we're going to merge it in. Actually, we're going to test it in its own branch, make sure everything's good there, which we have automated tests doing as well. And then we're also going, it's that branch is being rebased with master main. So it's almost an exact copy as if they did merge that stuff in. There's a high level of confidence throughout this whole process that whatever is being merged is very unlikely to be introducing regressions.
So some of those high level of confidence comes in part not just from like the end-to-end or the PHP unit tests and the linters that we've talked about, but there's also another suite of automatic testing that we aim to have, like check that there's no overwritten config. Were there update hooks run? We've got a schema check that is a Lullabot tool that we wrote so that we know when update hooks are run or not.
Is that public? I'm familiar with the tool. I didn't know if we had that in our public repo.
I don't know that it's public.
So we have, there is a public schema checker.
We're using the public schema checker. It was M. Gladman?
I believe that's
Matt Glayman. Yeah. Glayman. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got those checks. We're also automating like the check for the status page doesn't have errors, and we're automating a check that there's no new errors in the the recent log messages. So I guess I'm trying to emphasize that this auto merging, this high confidence that we have from this auto merging has resulted from a lot of investment that we've made into automating what people might manually do as peer review. And then because Lullabot has this kind of like standardization initiative that we've been working on for a few years, that's coming to fruition in the maturity of the Drainpipe project, which is a public open source project where we're putting this work that we've had to do on individual customers to do this automation. And we have done it over and over in different situations, we start to realize, well, what's generic enough that we can reuse? And then we're putting that in Drainpipe. So when we get a new customer now, we can get these automated tests in place a lot faster than we were doing 3 years ago.
Yeah, so Drainpipe is like a way that we could do continuous integration and add that to a project in like significantly less time than if you're like rolling it out specifically on each project, like piece by piece.
And we want other companies to be using it too. It's like the issue queue is open. You can make pull requests to it.
I think there was a Drainpipe channel in Drupal Slack that I saw. Somebody was like actually using it, and there was kind of some surprise. It was like oh, I think you're the first ones now. Cool. Glad you're here.
There's a check in there that isn't common. People overlook even as they're doing QA is like run cron. Like there's been so many times in the past where we test everything and it's perfect. We push something out and then people are like, hold on, how come our importer stopped working? Or how come, you know, something's not refreshing that should be happening in cron. And we run cron manually and we see some like PHP error. And we're like, oh, so part of Drainpipe and part of our workflow and checks is confirming that cron's going to be running no matter what we push.
One thing that I kind of just spiked in my mind, and I know that we got to rewind a couple minutes to where we were talking about it. You were talking about using Renovate to update modules and the whatnot. And I think without saying it, like the biggest conflict that I see out of that is composer.log files. So is that what you're trying to avoid when you're using that secondary branch, that merge branch before you merge it back in?
It doesn't matter what your target branch is, whether it is master or it is some intermediate branch. When that target branch changes, say something auto merges in, any open PR that maybe the tests are still running or there's something going on will rebase themselves with the changes in the target branch.
And generate a new hash for that composer JSON file.
Mm-hmm. Or compose a log file.
Sorry. Even if it's my manual adding a module pull request?
No. So yeah. That's where the, like, I think getting back to the integration branch comes in. So like additional features, non-maintenance things that may have composer changes that go into master. Your automatic updater, if it's targeting integration branch, can keep running. And then you only, I'm going to say only, need to resolve the conflicts between your main branch and your integration branch. And sometimes that's super easy. It's as easy as picking a composer lock content hash, and it doesn't matter which one you pick, and running composer update --lock to give you a new hash. Those are like my favorite conflicts to resolve because it takes me 2 minutes. But when you have more complex changes, especially when the feature that's going into the main branch is changing the same things that are getting updated, that's like not usually adding a new module. Adding a new module is not that too complicated, yeah. But when you're touching the same things, and then it, that can take sometimes some hours.
For example, like a contrib module may introduce new configuration, and that's one of the checks that we do, which would fail. And that's usually when a developer would step into that branch and just do a config export, so it's captured, and that'll go into the integration branch. But if anything's been done in the main branch that touches that same file, that's when you would need to like resolve those merge conflicts manually.
Yeah, well, so that's one of the benefits to, like, if you have a low velocity project, merging directly to main can remove that complexity from the system, but it's really project specific.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're doing actually on the Georgia project, and this is something that Kathy had suggested, you know, we're working in 2 week sprints, and Kathy's like, hey, why don't we do the composer and the NPM package updates like early on, so that all the other tickets that could influence and change some of these things already have all these updates, and then it kind of gets out of your way. So we've been trying to push that earlier on, so that we don't run into those conflicts by the end of the sprint where we're trying to merge in, say, 8 module updates and there's a ton of conflicts. Well, we did it early on, and now we don't have to worry. And that's the other thing. We're not just using these automated updaters for modules. This is also updating, you know, NPM packages that Theme relies on, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
So the Renovate, at least, I don't think all of them do, but Renovate at least will do composer updates as well as package.json updates. So we're kind of leveraging both halves to do all the things that we need to do.
I've even seen it at times updating config files where you're loading like Docker images. I'll be like, this is the preferred Docker image, and it'll create a PR for that.
I know we have an article about this, so we'll link to that in the show notes, but do you have any like must-have settings or preferences that you apply to all of these projects when you're setting them up, you know, all of this automated infrastructure?
But let me jump in first here, because the thing I have in mind relates to something we were talking about earlier, where we were saying that we were doing all the module updates separately, which in broad strokes is true. But there are cases where we customize our Renovate config, for example, to group packages together. For example, Drupal Core, Drupal Core Recommended, Drupal something, I forget, there's like three
project
or four.
Project messages. And then scaffold.
Yes. And so we have those all grouped together. And then there's also like some projects where I've grouped all the jQuery stuff together. And I think that configuration allows a nice balance between like strictly every single dependency and doing it all at once. Like, you can actually configure it to group it how it works for your project. What other favorite configs do people have?
It would be a little wonky to have like the Drupal core version going up to like the next version of Drupal core, but then your scaffolding is still stuck on the previous version. So that's definitely a reason to be like, no, we definitely want all three of these to be updated at the same time. I've also seen like web form modules and other extensions of web form modules needing to be updated together because they usually are go tandem. What other ones have I seen? We're grouping basically all the jQuery packages together and all the Gulp packages together instead of doing those individually.
We group meta tag and schema meta tag together in GoHub because they so often just go right together.
Makes good sense.
That's a good one. Yeah, and then there's other config options like... Oh, here's a good configuration. So Jenna was saying earlier how she's configured auto merge for the patch and minor updates. And initially on my projects, I had configured major versions to not even give me those. But after running Renovate for a while, and getting all caught up with all the minors, then I enabled the major versions to come in, but only with approval. So we still have to, like, as a developer or project manager, go to the, well, for Renovate, it's a dependency dashboard, and you can check a checkbox and say, I'm ready to try this major version update from version 3 to version 4. So it'll still do it for me, for us to like get that initial step, but we can control when it's doing that, when we're ready to work on it, because major versions, we're going to anticipate some manual work.
I actually pulled up a configuration file to find some of our other things that we use. So we do branch prefixing. So anything that Renovate creates, we do Renovate /, and then whatever the name of the package is. We do a concurrent limit for the number of PRs that are created.
Really important.
If you don't put a limit, it's going to be like, oh, you got 20 packages to be updated. Here's 20 PRs, right? And if you've got automated tests kicking off, that means you got 20 automated tests running. Well, however many tests per pull request being triggered at the same time. And then when one of those gets merged in, it needs to rebase all the other ones. So then you're kicking off the same number of tests again.
19, yeah, then it's like 19 and it's like 18. It can use up all your resources, your GitHub minutes. Mm-hmm. It can make things time out.
Yeah, so we put a limit on that to like 2 or 3. And what we found is sometimes we'll have flaky fails. You know, maybe the page didn't load quick enough, right? So it's like, oh, this PR is not going to work. But when it rebases the next time, everything runs great and everything passes. So yeah, we put our current limit to 2 or 3. And then we also have an auto merge schedule set for some projects. So you could say like, I want to do this outside of business hours. So after 5 p.m. until like 8 a.m. in the morning, you could have Renovate running instead of all day long. Or you could just say like only run on the weekends. It's pretty awesome.
Didn't we on one project run into an issue where Renovate was trying to create PRs for dependencies of dependencies?
Oh, I think there was like a package JSON inside a theme, and then there was also a package JSON in the doc root. Is that the situation you might be thinking of?
No, like child dependencies, right? So if I can't even think of a contrib module that has multiple now, but let's say Webform had
Webform packages that
are needed. It'll actually create a pull request for the sub dependencies. And you may not necessarily want that because if you update those, they may not be compatible with the version that Webform's expecting to be there. So I forget what setting we have that turns that off, but yeah, you probably don't want to do sub dependencies.
So that alongside not limiting your PR number you could find yourself with an extreme amount of PR overload and might panic a little. And the other thing with these PRs is too, you know, if you're not auto emerging, we still have the ability to say, no, don't do that. Yeah. Not everything bypasses us entirely. If it's an update we're not ready to commit to, or something we know is broken in it, we can say, hey, no, hold off on this.
I, for one, welcome our robot overlords. Somebody who may not be familiar with any of these tools, their head might be swimming over the last, you know, few minutes, because we're talking in vocabularies that are probably fairly unfamiliar. Jenna, you've seen this grow on your websites over time. How do you feel about it? Is it a welcome addition? Is it a bunch of work? Is it useful overall? It's helpful, I'm sure.
It's very helpful. I wrote most of the Renovate config we have running on GovHub and a couple other repos myself, and there was a lot of iterations to get it, like, to watch it run and then get it tweaked exactly what I wanted. But the documentation for Renovate is really, really good. It outlines all the configuration options, so many configuration options. But it is all there and very descriptive. And then you just run it and go, like, is that what I wanted? There's also, when you turn on initially, there's an onboarding PR. It automatically creates an onboarding PR. It's like, here's what we suggest for your project. So, like, to get you started and to tell you what's going to happen based on what is in that branch once you actually merge it.
It sounds like it's a lot of work, but in the end, that work ends with some time savings and some benefits for the maintenance.
Absolutely.
It's almost like adding a whole new developer to your team.
It is so much like adding a whole new developer to your team. Yes, and we have a Renovate bot user with a little robot face that just comes up all day saying, here's the things that I did for you. Yeah.
I think Renovate should look like a kitten, but that's just me. I don't know. Right?
Everything should look like kittens.
Do you have anything to add, Jenna, before we point toward wrapping this up?
I was thinking about when you were talking about integration branches, how I've actually set up a pipeline. So if we update Composer JSON or update package JSON in master, it automatically syncs it back to the integration branch. And also every time we cut a release tag, it automatically syncs it back to the integration branch. So the integration branch or the updates branch is, like, never too far behind the rest of what we're doing. And if for some reason that merge fails, we get a notification about that and somebody can go, like, fix it for real. But most of the time it doesn't fail, which is pretty cool.
That's great. Jason, do you have any final thoughts?
To be honest with you, life before these auto updaters kind of sucked. And some genius decided to put Composer into Drupal. And then some genius decided to leverage that Composer JSON file and create these bots that are whole new employees for you. And to be honest with you, as we navigate through our weekly sprints and things like that, it's nice not to be like, well, did somebody check and see if we had any updates and our PRs created? And, you know, is that ticket in the sprint? Just to have it and know that it's done. And even though occasionally it requires some human interaction, for the most part, it does the tedious stuff while you get to do the fun stuff. So
yeah, the whole, like, hey, reminder, there was an update to this module that you haven't thought about in a year. That's a great thing.
To me, it's such a huge savings to not be like, did somebody check to see if there's available updates? Just that step.
Yeah.
Nobody actually having to do that is just great all on its own, even if you don't do anything else.
Kathy?
Oh, thanks for picking me before Dave, so I can channel my inner Dave. Just the more checks that we can automate, a base level of CRUD for end-to-end tests and some config status checks. Just the more checks that we can automate, just the nicer our lives are.
David?
Yeah, Kathy's pretty much nailed it. Like, this forced us
she channeled Dave. She did it.
She did it.
It forced us to put automated tests in place, whether that be end-to-end or, you know, other checks that are happening, so we could get to the point where we're doing auto-merging and kind of just forgetting, not forgetting, but, you know, getting it out of the way. Because I really think one of the biggest values that we've created as a team is my mantra of like automate maintenance so we could humanize support. Like, let's be in Slack talking to our clients about like the things that they're struggling with as editors of the site or users of the site or developers on the site. Don't worry about the maintenance. Like, there's little value as a developer running Composer Update, you know, 9 times a day. Like, let the machines do that.
Very good. Morgan, I'm glad we have people like this who have thought about these things and can help integrate them into the Lullabrop projects we're on.
It's amazing. Yeah, I'm sure this will be coming to us soon.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.